feelings and perspectives in the wake of this global pandemic that is COVID-19. I was afraid that people would get isolated or I would lose the opportunity to chat with my community and find out how everyone is doing. So I made this show. If you're listening and you would like to get involved or be interviewed, you can contact me at mobile@cfru.ca. I'd like to provide the disclaimer that these interviews were recorded at different points in time, so situations in some of these locations may have changed. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Lynn McEntee, the publicity chair for the Guelph Little Theatre. This interview was originally recorded on September 2nd, 2020. So to start with, would you like to introduce yourself for listeners?
Sure. Hello, everyone. I'm Lynn McEntee, and I'm from the Guelph Little Theatre. I am the publicity chair.
So you have a few projects underway from me perusing the theater website, which is super exciting. Mm-hmm. Theater during a time of a pandemic must look very different. I guess maybe right out of the gates, do you want to tell me a bit about what the theater has been working on?
Yeah, thank you so much, Jenny. Very cool opportunity to do so. We have gone at it looking at it in a very positive light, if you will. The time to regroup and sort of bring community in perhaps and sort of hit the ground running. There was a pause of, as we tried to navigate our way through the summer, but we, in the back of our minds, knew we had some projects that could possibly be ongoing. And one of them in particular is working with local author Marian Reno. And she's written Cafe Conversations, and she was on the short list of the Stephen Leacock Literary Humor Award. So it's a great partnership with Marian. She's local. She reached out to us as well. Judith Eden, one of our board members, but also a volunteer at the theater who works in props and paint and has been acting VP, thought how cool would that be to see if Marian would be interested in doing this for us on a smaller stage, perhaps. And when we were able to pre-record these things. So I'll tell you a little bit more about that. There are four vignettes from Marian's book, and she's rewritten them just for us. Very cool. They have a nice twist of humor to them. Wonderful actors, actually, in the four vignettes, and we'll show them as a fundraiser for the theater. The fundraiser will be ongoing as we upload them and continue on into other online projects. So working with Marian has just been fabulous. She was part of building this set with Judith and another fellow named Corey, who's one of our volunteers. And the energy from that and the connection to community has been very, very awesome. And we rehearsed separately, but we were able to record where Marian got a chance to come in and see the recording process. So that kind of blew her away in terms of taking the written word off the page to the stage right before her eyes, right? One project, we're to launch it at the end of August, beginning of September, as we go through the editing process, because it's a new adventure for us in terms of longer vignettes, but also longer videos for us to produce for people, right? So that's a fundraiser there. I have other ones to chat about as well, if I can kind of share that.
Yeah, well, I guess one thing I'm curious about right away is if the project working with Marian was something that was always a plan and maybe got moved up because of its feasibility, or is it a situation where like this the pandemic format actually made this make more sense? Do you know what I mean?
Like Yeah, good question, actually. No, for sure. I think Marian always had something swirling around in that regard. Not necessarily maybe in terms of play matter. So I believe that this kind of did move us up for her to fine-tune it according to our needs for more immediate online. Yes.
What have some of the hurdles been? Like, I don't know whether or not the theater traditionally has always filmed things, and, you know, just that the live theater component is obviously normally kind of, at least I think of it as the focus, but perhaps you guys are very versed on translating things for film, but are you, or is this a new learning curve?
That's a good question. I believe it is a new learning curve for sure. And as we fine tune sort of the process, it'll be very interesting to see where we take it with other projects upcoming. So yes, looking at more of sort of a documentary type stuff, well, that style, capture that as you go. So this is an experiment for all of us, experiment for Marian, our videographer, our actors as well, because we encourage the use of using the script you know, so the viewers could see that. So yes, to all.
Do you, I guess I'm going into like the specifics of the, but because I haven't seen it yet, I'm curious if the, I guess, you know, when something's on a screen, you have to decide where you want the audience to look. Whereas when something's on a stage, the audience members, to some extent, can direct their attention anywhere, even places you don't want them to look. And I'm curious with filming, when it comes to editing and deciding like what shots to use or what angles, is there a whole new role for the director, or is there like a director of focus? Because it is kind of a new thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely, big time. And again, this is a project that was really just a, okay, let's go, let's hit the ground running and see where we go. So each person who's in a new role. So for example, I do a film aside from Guelfledo Theatre and other things like that in the province. But that being said, that might come easily for me in that regard. But someone else is learning that process and willing to kind of take that on. So even acting for the film, as you mentioned, very, very different as someone sitting right in front of you. You're almost playing bigger. And then you could be playing big to an auditorium for sure, 300-700 people kind of thing. But in the same sense, to the camera, for this type of thing, it's almost trying to capture those moments. But yes, I think as each one is filmed beyond Cafe Conversations, the director will learn that process, videographer will learn that process and add it to the repertoire as they go, like, oh, maybe I'll do that the next time, or, right? So, like, well, a nice thing that came up was underlying music, because we do often have that for our videos. And yes, we do record promotional videos for our main stage plays. So we are familiar with the videography process, but on a longer period is very different for us. But yeah, learning and growing as we go. And
how does it compare in terms of the time it takes to pull it all together? Is it comparable to a live performance, or is it faster or slower?
We actually did it very fast in terms of the rehearsal process. The production team in particular just said, okay, you know, do you want to hit the ground running? We'll do our rehearsals from afar. They'll work on the set. So we did. But the 2-day process for videography was very short. The editing process is painstaking, as any editor will know, for television or film or whichever radio. It can be very, very painstaking and very precise. So I think that that's where they're at right now in terms of editing and just, you know, fine tuning and maybe going back and, you know, revisiting something they hadn't thought of before filming.
Well, as a person who has done theater and film, and like you being that person and myself not being overly familiar with the processes, when I imagine a theater performance going together for theater, even though I know there's the role of the director, I also feel like there's bound to be some amount of sort of input or influence from, you know, actors approaching things a certain way and a director going, you know what, yeah, sure, let's try it that way. Or maybe the writer shows up and has some input or feedback. But I'm not sure if I'm right about that. I don't know. Is there a role that makes the kind of calls the shots and the other people all kind of yield to it, or is it more collaborative? And then when you switch to filming, does that change? Like, I guess who is weighing in on the ultimate decisions around like which clips or which angles to use?
Yeah, I know for sure. For theater in general, for our main stage productions, we have a production team that would go through that process, the producers for sort of the larger things, linking everything from A to Z, but including also the audition process as well, right? So, you know, and that kind of comes together to put on, to get the show. But the directorial team is very important for a main stage production. You do have to, there's the traditional way, of course, where it's, you know what the director says or the highway kind of thing. But it really, if you embrace it as an engaging process, that can be very learning and growing together opportunity. Some directors will go the route of allowing more input from their actors to be a part of that process and be open to change, and not, and that that's probably speaks more to their experience and a little bit more comfort level, being able to do that, right? To step outside their comfort zone, right? So yes, that process on stage can be like a 4-month period during rehearsals, and then finally, you know, 2 months before or a month before rehearsals, you kind of zero in, and this is exactly what we'd like to do. It seems to be working, so let's go with that, right?
Okay.
For this one in particular, the director, there was one director that was sort of assigned, but in the same sense, she allowed, that's Christina Jackson, she's also in one of the vignettes, but she allowed just to sort of oversee and maybe just, you know, is there a suggestion I could make, because it was such a short process. And that was allotted with Marion, the playwright as well, the author, allowing us to kind of tweak around. But they and all of us felt that the actors would bring what they needed to the table from it being a book, that the audience would be part of that reading of the book.
Gotcha.
Characters with you, yeah. So a little different there.
Yeah, so when it, that is a really a great description, like that gave me a lot of clarity into sort of the ebb and flow of it. When it comes to, say, rehearsing from a distance, or maybe now the kind of time-consuming editing part, how interactive is that? Like, are there folks other than the director or the editor? And is the editor working directly with the director? Is that the same person in this case? Like, what is that looking like?
No, that's a very good question. With it being Marion's book, so if we were doing a main stage play, we would be tweaking it as we somewhat wish, but this is a partner collaboration of honoring the written work. Most recently. Marion is very much a part of that editing process. The production team, Judith Eden and Christina Jackson as well, are part of that. But ideally, we want Marion to be happy with the process and how that represents her, but also how it would represent GLT and what her intent was to form a partnership with us as well. Yeah.
Has there been any real resistance, like, or have some folks been transitioning to this model better than others in terms of, like I imagine some folks have drifted or been drawn to the theater because they like that environment, and but obviously during this pandemic things have had to change, that some people probably love it, some people are probably seeing, like, you know, nice new things that are possible because of it. But has it been hard for some folks to transition to this way of doing things?
Yes, indeed, for sure. Absolutely. I know at the beginning, I was working with different groups in the province, which was interesting. We were looking at mobilizing in Guelph, if you will, how we to go about that, because it is a new adventure for people. And as we decided to do that, we were able to kind of be a little bit more open-minded. But yes, so some of the groups I work with outside of, well, actually we did pre-recording again, and it was for a fundraiser for that particular theater company as well. Others I've been involved in when they prefer to go that way. So it's a live process, and anything goes, just like theater, right? Anything goes at that point, which is kind of cool, because that's a huge learning curve for people too, and them performing to a Zoom audience, right?
Yeah.
So, right? You know, yeah. How do you? Yeah. So, if, it just is what it is, right? Kind of thing, and so that can be painstaking for people. And you know, maybe they felt a strength when they were on stage, but they're learning a whole different process here. Where that strength is not necessarily as strong, but they're learning something else, right? That they're really good. So I love that, and I love seeing people evolve in the process and the fear factor being removed as you go, right? And others, we've been doing a lot of online stuff, but a lot of pre-recorded, and I do really embrace the live stuff as well, too. I think that's very important, and there is a place for it. It just depends on what you want to achieve, what your target is, right?
Yeah, well, it's super interesting, because when I think of Zoom as a performance tool, so I've mainly been watching music performances, and I'm a musician myself, so when I watch it, I am really feeling for the performer that they can't see their audience, because I know personally that's a really significant piece. That's where I'm getting most of my energy. But what makes music performances very different is there aren't months and months and months of playing alone and like bantering, like, you know, we don't have to rehearse a dialogue with an invisible audience. Whereas when I think of theater, I think of a group of people who are very used to channeling very real and like literally acting, right? So yeah. Being able to channel that even when there is no one in that audience. And so I kind of pictured theater folks as being uniquely poised to embrace something like Zoom, because they wouldn't be strangers to the idea of performing for an invisible audience. But yeah. I never thought about the fact that you still count on it culminating in a real audience that you can see. And yeah, that's just a really interesting kind of like energy angle that I don't know, like what do you channel when it comes to the performance? Do you feel like it changes when there's bodies in the room, or can you kind of manifest the idea of those folks even if you can't see them?
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. I of course, we all love everyone being in the room, and that's what it's sort of all about. I've actually felt a real charge with your audience members, actually, and hearing comments afterwards, right? So I like that live aspect to the screen. I do think that's very cool, and I think it's very engaging, very intimate. So it's intimate in a very different way than if you're sitting, you know, in a theater. But in the same sense, there's a place for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I think people are becoming more, I guess, unraveled. Yeah, because it's a new forum, right? It's interesting because I just came off a Canada-wide festival, and it was all pre-recorded, you know, that kind of stuff. But normally we would have been in Toronto, Nathan Phillips Square, and people would have come to Toronto to celebrate this festival. It was a Moksha festival, and it was all of that. So that's what we were doing, is all of these panels from across Canada and the world. We were all getting together and getting our pieces together, whether it be a performer, you know, whichever, or if it's some dignitaries you're talking to on a panel. And it was really cool. At the end of it all, we all commented on how we would like to add those components still to the real time festival next year.
Yeah. I'd love to talk about that, because that's been my experience too, as the months have gone on. And I think some of the approaches have shifted from sort of the compromised grasping at trying to make something resemble what was before, and starting to shift into a new way of looking at it altogether. I absolutely feel like, especially from the position of accessibility, like I've heard that from a lot of people, whether it's online dance classes or it's watching music performances in places that you could never get to, folks who have already traditionally felt excluded from certain types of spaces, whether it was a physical barrier or it's financial, have been able to participate and have been loving that it's kind of been a new level playing field for the audience to include them now. And yeah, they are kind of like, a lot of them express concern that if we went back to normal, air quotes, too soon, they may be left out again. And I am cautiously optimistic that we can start to look at things in a way that doesn't have to leave those folks behind, even if we, you know, like there's, I guess, like, have you recognized, like, what are some of the new things you've seen made possible by these new formats in terms of maybe new people engaging or people being able to engage differently than when theater was in its other form?
Yeah, no, I think the diversity yeah. of talent really speaks to me. I've certainly noticed that people are stepping outside their comfort zone and perhaps allowing other talents, you know, to be a part of that process that they maybe had never seen before, right? So diversity and inclusion, in turn inclusion from there, really speaks volumes to me. I think that will be highlighted. Yeah, definitely highlighted for sure, more so. And I think people will keep that in the forefront instead of the back burner, as we, you know, always keeping that in mind. Diversity, yeah. So how do we engage everyone from all aspects of society? Maybe we had forgotten about them before, but now we're aware. And that's really what it's about. It's learning and growing, and you evolve as a person. So maybe you didn't know that before, but you do now. And let's try and find a way to include all people.
How far ahead is the theater planning. So I know traditionally you would have like a whole season of performances that would be, you know, like I know that the schedule comes out and that's all in there. So normally the theater plans so many months out, I think maybe even like a year out in some cases, right? And so I guess like I know that you mentioned that over the summer you sort of pause to regroup and think about what's possible to launch again this fall. How far are you looking now in terms of have you guys settled into like this is the new format for the foreseeable future, so let's start planning out again, or are you still taking it kind of month by month and watching how the world's evolving to see whether or not the any of those other performances can return? Like how are you guys planning?
That's a great question. We are planning for a season, different format, of course, with us launching into the 85th, and that's pretty huge for us, and coming through a pandemic, also very huge. We go about this in a positive way. So yes, we've planned for a few months of online programming that will continue to evolve as we go into the sort of December period as well. But we do have the main stage show Swordfish in waiting for when we are able to open, and whatever that may look like, are able to mount that show that was to mount in April of this year and had to pause, unfortunately. All the actors were ready to go and such. So there's a little bit of recasting there because one actor had to go to France. Back to France and such and other things, but that is ready to go, and we're positive that that will be honored in whatever form we can do that to open it up to the public. And then, of course, Romeo and Rosalind, which was to be our last main stage show in June, but we had to regroup there, and then all the actors were rehearsing there and getting ready, so they're ready to go for when that happens as well. So that's our focus. We did have some other plays in mind for the season. Well, we didn't pursue them because we knew sort of the way it was going, and we wanted to honor the ones that were left in waiting, if you will. What's kind of cool about Swordfish is it's a local playwright as well, so he's you know, he's willing to kind of go with the flow kind of things to see where it pans out. With Romeo and Rosalind, the playwright, it was poignant because he had passed away about a year before it was to go on stage in June. And his widow was going to come down from Toronto and bring a busload of supporters for opening. So, yeah, it's poignant in a sense. We do really want to honor that play as well. And some of our online programming, I could kind of speak about that on the side. We're looking at doing Manu the Puppeteer, exploring the world through unity and inclusion, and bringing that to our audience members online and sort of post or even through while we're showing Cafe Conversations as well. And again, we're emphasizing to the public it is a fundraiser. We have no money coming in at this time. And with an 85-year-old nonprofit, all volunteer-run organization, you know, revenue is important. So even if it was $5 or $10 or whichever it may be, if any, you know, just kind of keep us in mind for that kind of thing. When I mentioned Romeo and Rosalind, we have Capulet's Corner that's coming up after Manu the Puppeteer, and that's some sort of yes, that's been written by Christina Jackson, rewritten and with permission with Andrew Batten's widow to rewrite those, and she's looking at doing those online for us as well. And the actors are just starting to rehearse for that. So a funny take on Romeo and Rosalind, but Capulet's Corner, air quotes, right? Yes, and then some other surprise things for leading us into the fall. Yeah, so that's kind of it in a nutshell. Hoping to do other online things, but maybe in person as well. We're looking at putting together an 85th celebration in the parking lot, and it probably will be throughout the year we celebrate because we do have that opportunity this time around. And we're looking at sometime in October. We've just had a meeting about it last night, but looking probably first or second week of October at the latest. I've already booked some performers for that. So, and of course, we're looking to see you there as well, Jenny.
It's such an impressive, like, you make it sound so smooth. Like it sounds like such a perfect, like, these plays will be honored and they're kind of like postponed, but we're looking at them, and then these are the ones we're rolling in the meantime. And I'm not sure that I've heard such a it sounds almost intentional, like as far as response to pandemic. I'm super impressed by the
Thank you.
theaters rolling that out. Yeah,
Thank you
because
very
I,
much.
you know, some places have had to completely redefine. I mean, I think you could argue everyone has had to almost, but I guess maybe it's the improv kind of at the core of the actors that have made you guys really ready to sort of like pivot and look for new possibilities when these barriers come up? Like, I don't know if it's a testament to your those skill sets that you embody, but it really is very impressive to hear how the theater has shifted to embrace it.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for saying that. That's very kind of you to say that. And I think it is that it's the leadership skills really come into play in this regard, right? And you're talking about pivoting, and absolutely so. And we learn those skills at different times in our lives. And in this case, it's coming in really handy to keep that positive always in the forefront, right?
Yeah.
Because we are the human spirit.
Yeah. Well, your mention of leadership, like, there's so much to be said for your trust in, you know, the director, so to speak. But this is a great time for people who have figured out how to make things work to take on these kind of like leadership roles, or to, you know, start suggesting projects, because some people want to have a positive outlook and want to do things right now. But the concept of having to come up with how is really overwhelming. And so it's potentially a fantastic time for community to lean into those roles. Like, I've got an idea, and then this person being like, I've got energy and enthusiasm. And then those two get together and, you know, can start to make things happen. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's so energizing. And you're right, actually. It's a different spin on it, but hopefully a good one, right? And just morphs as you go.
Yeah. Well, I know that you, like myself, have rolled with this pandemic and managed to stay creative and productive. And I'd love to hear more about what your experience has been. And I will say, like, I know from personal experience, it's sort of weird to admit when you can thrive during what is obviously like a terrible worldwide pandemic. You know, it's not a great situation, but it is interesting how during a point of struggle, you can still thrive in other ways, right? And so I'm curious to hear what your experience has been, and maybe if you have even clued into some of your past experiences or skill sets that have helped you during the pandemic in terms of navigating it.
Oh, that's great, Jenny. That's also a very good question. Awesome. You know, absolutely. I taught international students, both local and international participants, also survivors of trauma. I worked in the mental health field and health field as well, a crossover, as well as, you know, the radio and the film and all the other. But that is sort of the core of where, you know, I started. And I truly believe that helps you to focus on the whole person, right? And all those skill sets that kind of go around that, and keeping a person balanced. So absolutely, those have been applicable skills. And I noticed it right away in terms of engagement and lack of alienation, not wanting to keep people at bay and feeling alone in this process of the unknown, right? So that was important to me as a leader and as a community member to you know, and group everyone in right away. Let's go, you know, here we go, how can I help you, that kind of thing. So you see some people in sort of some dark places, but you know, there are ways to help them as well too, right? Whether it be through theater or somewhere in the community, and you're reaching your hand out to them. And I think linking people in is so important, because it is the circle of life, is it not? You know, and really it's about the web of support. So yes, all of those things that I've done in the past have absolutely come into play. And I'm actually finding quite a crossover and reconnection with people currently for that. Yeah.
What format has it taken for you? Like, what did you lean into that has had the best sort of like personal result or connection? Because I feel like we have a bunch of different technologies and a bunch of different things available to us, but some probably have proven more rewarding than others. Like, what have you been using to engage?
You know what? I have been using this tool that we're using now, and it has been absolutely amazing. So again, making that connection with somebody, whether they're in Africa or they're in Montreal, Canada, or they're in Guelph, because we're all going through the same thing. So this tool has been very, very useful. And we used to all kind of do that before for business travel and such too, anyway. But this stepped it up a scale. But Telephone for sure, of course, and I think for some people that may aren't able to use these type of tools, but very much this way and consistent engagement throughout the day and on a day-to-day basis, and you know, sort of setting goalposts for yourself, right? Shows on reconnecting, you know, whether it be with that person a month later or a week later. So this form wouldn't normally be my ideal form, but I'm comfortable with it, and you know, in terms of online stuff. But leaving that door open for other support at a socially distanced level if need be, right?
You're listening to Bridging the Social Distance, a show recorded here in Guelph at CFRU as a platform for sharing stories and perspectives during the global pandemic of COVID-19. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Lynn McEntee, Publicity Chair of the Guelph Little Theatre.
Yeah. Well, can you bring me up to speed on the process now? So Guelph is, we're very low numbers these days. So in terms of the sort of reopening and transitioning back to regular operations, perhaps Guelph isn't as scary as some places that are navigating those same decisions when their, you know, case counts are much higher. But I also know that, like you said, the theater is looking ahead and thinking of a whole season that is remote. And so in terms of how much there is in person, how much you guys gather in physical spaces, what is it looking like at this point? Or maybe what did it start to look like when you first started doing it, and what is it shifting towards?
So when this started, we were automatically assigned people in charge of the building. So there's a team of, so they only have access to make sure everything's running, the plumbing's running, et cetera, and keeping it clean. But as it opened up in the province, we were, again, following the provincial guidelines. We were to get in and record, do a small recording for this Cafe Conversations. We did rehearsals off-site, but we kept it very minimal, and again, and you swoop in and you clean and that kind of thing. So we're very, very lucky that we have a health and safety team that's doing that right now. And in terms of other people using the building, people have inquired about rentals and things like that. We're not there yet. There are some places in the province, in Kitchener right now, I know of a theater company that's renting out space. So we do have inquiries, but we've sort of taken slow steps. With everyone else, you know, you're allowed up to 50 to 100 people, but in the same sense, you know, we're just kind of figuring out what people are comfortable with as we go. So we're literally, I guess, as sort of backtracking, we're going month to month assessing, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, for sure. And but not closing the door on opportunities to engage people.
It's interesting to picture. Like in my mind, when I think of a bunch of actors doing, like I've seen some readings, for example, where actors gather on something like Zoom and do read through a script together in a fun animated way and do these characters. And in a sense, in that format, you don't really need a stage at all. Each person may be in their bedroom or their bathroom or their living room or who knows where. And the odd person, you're like, wow, they have their own studio. But, it's interesting to think of the role of the physical stage and space itself and how essential it is. But it seems like a huge opportunity to have access to this big, beautiful space in terms of staging, especially if you're trying to maintain distances, to have access to a lot of room to do that. But it is a strange thing to sort of puzzle through, like how important the spaces are as opposed to the platform, I guess, that they are released in.
That's really cool. So if you're doing it informally, it's interesting. Like I just did one with a group in Virginia and, you know, the guys from there. And it was cool. And we were all really super animated and stuff. It was, like, awesome. It was very, very, very energizing. We just kind of went with it, right? But again, you know, it was informal on screen. But some of the other ones that we've done that are more for the public, I guess, in the area, it's interesting to see people because the directors would allow us to change the backgrounds. So if you have that ability to zoom it out according to whatever scene you're doing, for example, columns for the Colosseum or kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe just by chance somebody showing up at the wrong screen, you know, during rehearsals. And that's okay, too, because we're all kind of just working through it, right? But it's neat to see people in costume with their scenes ready to go and then performing to the camera, because that might be an adjustment as well, too, because they're in a small space, basement in their home or something, or, you know, up at the cottage somewhere, and they're trying to find a spot to shoot this, right? So that, oh, you hear a bird flying past, or, you know. I find it very cool because, again, it speaks to the improv skills. I think the audience is very forgiving because it is during an experimental time for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. I think if we're finding the joy and the laughter in putting the production together, I think our audience would find the joy and laughter and support in viewing as well, too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, what I've been observing has been a group of people who really want to support, which is nice. Like any amount of sort of art or performance being shared is being considered like kind of a bonus and a gift during this time, I think. And so that's really awesome. In terms of the play you're doing right now, the vignettes, the cafe conversations, how did that go together? Like, are folks sharing space safely? Were they recorded to look like people are in the same place, but they're not? How did that kind of go together?
Yeah, no, it was a very small group of people. So once the set was built, we worked out dates with the actors when they could be there. And that's why we kind of did it over a 2-day period. We also had some media covered as well, too, and wanted to see about that process. So, you know, let's say you're in a cafe and then the set is looking like a cafe and it's two actors, right? And you're socially distanced. And that's your bubble actor. So that's kind of how we were assigned to each other, and it worked out perfectly. Yeah, so you really feel like you're in the cafe, you know. They did a really good job of the set dressing for that. With each vignette, they're all in the same setting, right? Yeah, yeah.
So did you had to bubble with another actor for the duration?
Yeah, so,
that's so cool. That's a great way to do it.
Right? And it's just, you know, just bring it in, right? Let's do this. And yeah, that's the best way to do it for sure.
Yeah, I guess I've been sort of picturing scenarios where there's sort of like 14 days leading up to a performance where everybody could essentially quarantine and then be safe together. Kind of, you know, there's been examples of that in broader spectrums. I've seen a few bands have done that where they quarantined and then got together for rehearsals and then recording all in one swoop. So they're sort of their own bubble for that period of time. But then after that, they can quarantine again and go about their other bubbles. It's really interesting, the amount of intention, I guess, that has to go into it. And that's like a whole other level of development. Emotion that you are asking of these actors, you know?
That's right. And, you know, it's interesting too, because really it was minimal rehearsals. So if it is another production, you know, you may need several more rehearsals, but it was very minimal for us. So that worked out perfectly in that regard. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, you're putting the same kind of time and commitment in, but to safety as opposed to extra rehearsing, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. No, it is for sure. And like the actors are tops, so that they really embrace the opportunity to do so, right? Yeah. So.
In terms of the broader theater projects that you're connected to, because I know you've mentioned that you have connections basically around the world, I think, in terms of different theater, certainly North America, there were a few different places mentioned. I guess I have an idea of like what the Guelph Little Theatre's approach is going to look like for the next little while. What are some other theaters' approaches to this time? Like, are other people starting to look at a new normal and a season that looks a certain way with the pandemic in mind? Or have more people sort of been like, we're on hold until ... Like, what has been the overall kind of feeling when you've talked to other theaters about who's moving forward with new models, who has made old models work, and who has paused?
For sure. Each is very individual. It depends on what the mandate is of the theater and the target audience, for sure. So some have canceled them outright until the following season, you know, like the end of September 2021, right? Some of them have. And that's because they just take so much to put on a huge, big-time production, let's say a musical or something like that, right? Others have gone right online, and like Black Box Radio, those kind of things, and started that way, and just assumed that that's going to be the way they're going for a little while, at least until the 2021, you know, until they figure it out. So I think it's a variety. It's a lot of this. There are some performances that I've been doing pre-recorded, some online. Yeah, different target audiences. It just depends. It's very individual, very provincial thing, you know.
Have, in the cases of, say, like I know you mentioned, because Swordfish is a mm-hmm. local production, it's maybe a bit easier to have that conversation around postponing mm-hmm. because there's not mm-hmm. as many outside pieces that you have to navigate. Obviously, yeah. some theater performances involve a ton of outside people coming mm-hmm. into spaces. And you know, you mentioned that the one actor for Swordfish even had to return to France or one of the mm-hmm. production
yes,
people.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, has there been a general conversation or like, are folks leaning towards resuming what would have been the 2020, you know, series in 2021? Or are folks kind of looking at it like it's a start over when we get to reopen? Have people been leaning one way or the other?
Yeah, no, good question. So we really do want to honor those two plays. For that season. So whatever time period that may be, the Swordfish and the Romeo and Rosen will be shown.
Sure.
And we plan sort of thereafter. We had another opener in mind for sure. But yeah, that would have been a pretty big production, but we just didn't even go forward with it because it wasn't fair to these other two productions. That would probably chew up the season right there then, right? And that takes us into 2022. So those will just shift according to on the dial when we can actually let that happen.
Right. And in terms of other theaters, have has there been a general sense that, because I know in music this was a really big topic, like what is the threshold after which you're no longer postponing the lineup, say, as planned for a festival, for example, versus it's going to be a new festival, like, you know, in 2021 or 2022.
Yeah.
In some of those bigger performances with more moving pieces, have folks talked about honoring productions mm-hmm. that were underway, or did a lot of...
One of the companies I'm with right now, it's an opera company, and there was the opera festival that was to go on in June, and that would have been performed up in the Huron area, but that was all postponed. We've just regrouped for that, and pre-recording of that instead, showing it that way.
Okay.
That would be a June production being shown, you know, sometime in September, October for that one. But there's also another one in the making for the 2021 season that's already planned for pre-recording as well. And we're to our bubbles of recording. So, yeah, it's kind of neat. So they're moving forward with the full season with this opera company I'm with. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So, folks are really making it work.
Yeah, they really are. They're just a wonderful group. Yeah, no. So I'm enjoying that they're moving forward with it. Yeah, and they're all about community opera, right? So,
what are some of your favorite innovations that you've seen emerge in terms of using these technologies? I know you mentioned that, you know, some of your favorite outcomes in terms of like diversity coming to the table and such in certain ways that, you know, are maybe easier now. But what are some of your favorite innovations from a technical side? So like creative approaches to pre-recording or gathering or even the live ones you were mentioning. What are some of your favorite that you've seen in terms of maybe the most successful to you or the most creative or most surprising?
I like the improv aspect of live, but I've loved the pre-recording as well to honor the work of the writer, whether it be a comedy and such, so you can really bring it right. I don't have a favorite, really. I know so much. A lot of people want to be live on stage, and yes, I get that too. But I think we don't always have that opportunity in life, right, to do that. And so I've just embraced really the opportunity to do improv this way, really. So there's not a favorite. I think just everything that I'm enjoying. Yeah.
Are there certain technologies or ways that they've been put together that have been really good for particular types of theater? So like in terms of pre-recording, has there been something that's worked really well for making people seem like they're in the same space? Or say for that live element, is there something that's worked really well in terms of timing that it has felt really present? Are there certain things you've found that way?
Yeah, it was very cool. We did one recording for a Brentford group, and long story short, it was a comedy, and we all rehearsed together, but then we recorded our pieces and did our bits, and the editing process was just hilarious. They did such a good job on that. It really seemed like we were all on a doomed flight to Madagascar, you know? It was so well done on the editing process there for that. And so, yeah, I really enjoyed that because it really spoke to the comedy piece. And a brilliant comedy writer, Martin Smith, yeah.
I love that. So it actually looks like you're in the same space once the editing's done.
Yes.
Do you have to provide disclaimers when it's too believable that you guys are sharing a space?
They didn't. It was assumed. And it's just assumed when the production goes on, you know, hey, this is a pre-recorded.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's funny. In the earliest days of recording these radio interviews, there were a couple times where the person I was interviewing had the means of recording their side and then sending me that file. So you really can't tell that we're in two different places. And at first, I did feel the need to tell listeners that these were separate recordings pieced together. No matter how good it sounds, please don't worry that we're in a studio together right now. And as time's gone on, I've felt less concerned that anybody would be assuming anything dangerous or unsafe. But it is, when I think of representing CFRU, for example, I would hate to have a listener misinterpret a recording and think that we're just up at the station business as usual. So it's kind of ironic when something's so smooth that people get nervous again. Like a photographer described to me that when she used one of her lenses that was a really powerful zoom, then she had to articulate that she was not standing right in front of that couple that she was photographing. She was very far away with a very good camera, but found like she was self-conscious about what it looked like to be that intimate. And so it's just interesting, like kind of the disclaimers or the desire to put people, because even people watching television and movies have described that they're starting to feel uncomfortable watching things that were obviously recorded years ago, but where people are gathering and they're hugging and they're kissing, and it feels so strange now to see it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's important, especially in terms of publicity as well, right? And when you're promoting something to people, for people to know that those protocols were in place, right? And they start thinking about these projects, that's the first thing people, you know, they kind of gasp and, I don't know. But there are many ways to do it in a very, very respectful way. But it's interesting you mentioned the other, because I think with film, you know, there'll be different ways to shoot, like, say, background performers, right? They'll be looking at different ways moving forward with that. Do you gather, you know, 100, you know, people to film that scene, or do you use something from another piece? Right? Are they going to be in the bubble, you know? I'd say.
Yeah, it makes me curious if they're going to start to choose totally different types of performances too, like different pieces, like, well, Marion's, for example, being really conducive to this cafe, the, you know, the vignettes are a really good format for like going on as separate little pieces. But if people start to choose scripts that lean well to distancing, so if they'll steer away from, say, romantic scripts where a lot of close intimacy needs to happen for the storyline to be successful, do you think people are going to start to look for scripts that yield to distancing?
And I think, you know, certainly in theater, maybe so. And as far as in film, they're sort of going towards casting people with the same, like, you know, the same family, you know, a commercial or, you know, casting this if they can, you know, in some way, shape or form, but it just happen to be actors, both actors. but it'd be more challenging for sure in terms of those kind of things, right? And just the waivers that go along with that. But I know the people that are in place for that are pretty heavy at this point. They're really hitting the ground running with that because they have to, right?
Do you think that people are going to start to write scripts that are in response to this pandemic? Do you think this is going to affect the storylines coming out in terms of new material?
I certainly do, all the way. Absolutely, all the way, for sure. Yeah.
I have a couple questions I've been typically asking everybody. One of the questions I've been asking people is around support. So, you know, I've asked people from a lot of different angles around like whether it's support they'd like to see implemented or if it's something that they've seen that has been working to support community. And in the case of you being able to represent the Little Theater, I would love to know what you think support could look like in terms of our community or anybody listening, reaching out and supporting local theater and keeping it going through this pandemic and this troubling time. So if there's any ways that you can think of that support could look like for us to help you.
No, thank you so much, Jenny. Definitely for the viewership, for sure. We would still like them to continue to support in that way, whether it be donating the ticket price they would normally purchase if they were to attend the theater. That would be amazing. Our sponsors as well, if they can continue to support, or perhaps somebody is interested in sponsoring, there'd be a lot of ways to cross-promote there. The interesting thing is that we've had a lot of volunteers who have actually been interested during this time period and how they can help. So, you know, we had like, you know, 10, 15 volunteers that put their names forward over a course of a week that just said they'd like to be a part of it and get going with something. So there are ways for volunteers to be engaged in that regard. They can work on something from afar, or it could be a planned project that we have in motion that we could have someone working on. The other thing is the tourism has really supported us right now, so we have the opportunity to produce an 85th anniversary tourism video, and we were chosen among many to do that. So I'm excited to be sharing that. It's something that we're working on right now and just getting started with. And we're just honored that they chose us going into our 85th year. So that's another way that will help us to engage and for people to still be aware of us and such. So yes, monetary, of course, key for us. Resources, you never know, there might be something that we could use that someone else has, certainly, whether it be material or monetary, right?
Yeah.
A variety of things, yeah.
I like the way you framed that too, that I think in terms of asking for, like, you know, money is helpful, but if you frame it as a ticket to a show, because that really is what it is, I think that's, it's really important for us as audience members, I think, to remember that just because we're watching something on a screen and we're so used to things on screens just being available to us, you know, they seemingly come out of nowhere and they just present themselves on our screen and we get to enjoy them for free so much. But I think we really do run the risk of forgetting how much actual effort and resource goes into creating that content that we love so much. So this is a time where it's really important to remember that watching Guelph Little Theater on a screen needs to be supported the same way it would be if you were in that seat. You know, it's not Netflix. It isn't one of these big groups. It's human beings in our town that are putting this together as a labor of love. And so, yeah, it's a great reminder for listeners to still remember to attach a monetary value to that so it can continue.
Yeah, we're just thrilled to make it to 85 years, right? Imagine all the stories that go in between and just moving forward. That's the only way to look at it. Really, the community is so important to us. We are who we are because of the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other question I've been asking folks is one around silver linings. And so I've brought this up a few times throughout our conversation about things you've enjoyed and seen emerge. I guess maybe not limited to theater. What is something that you've seen happen during this time that you would love to see continued? So again, not suggesting a global pandemic is not a serious and, you know, difficult thing to be going through together, but recognizing that sometimes positive points emerge in spite of it. If you were told the theater could go back to operations as usual, or even taking it outside of theater, you got the call that you could go back to doing things the way you were doing things before, is there something you've seen emerge during this time that you would love to embrace and continue doing or see continued, even if we got to go back to air quotes normal?
Yeah, no, for sure. That's great. Actually, very simply for me, it would be recognizing everyone in the room, if you will. And it doesn't, not in the physical space, but just in general in life. And I think that that's highlighted even more so. And it's stuff that really should be at the core of what you're doing anyway, but in the same sense that sometimes you need to have something highlighted before you realize, right? So recognizing every person, every citizen, and everybody has a contribution. Is there a place for them at the table? Does everybody feel welcome? Right? Mm-hmm. And I think that is what I'm seeing, is people feeling welcome. And for me, that just speaks volumes. There's no price tag you can put on that, because we are dealing with human souls, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm. Well, for people listening, I would love you to share links. So if you want to share information about the Cafe Conversation specifically and how people can watch that, or what the timeline is on getting to enjoy that as an audience member, but also directing folks to the Guelph Little Theatre in general, and anything else you want to share, can you share some links and for listeners?
Yeah, no, for sure. Definitely. So all social media is out there and open and ready to go. We do have a YouTube channel that will, for everything, we will be posting the link to it to lead us to our Guelph Little Theatre YouTube channel. So really it's guelphlittletheatre.com for our main website and information, but social media is active and letting people stay current with that. So awesome. We'll share the links as we go for the projects as they're launched. Yeah.
Amazing. What is the timeline for the Cafe Conversations?
Yes, we were thinking the end of August, but we're probably looking at another weekish, so probably early September-ish. Yeah, and then we'll launch into the puppeteer mid-September-ish to October-ish.
Awesome. Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think absolutely, Jenny, you have been so thorough, and I think I really appreciate you as a person, as a community. We've met many times before, but I really feel part in all of this, so I can't thank you enough for that, and just taking the time to keep it all real.
Well, it's been fun. It's definitely been the biggest source of kind of enthusiasm and spirit lifting during this time, has been to connect with other folks, you know, in general, but especially people who have taken a sort of creative response to this pandemic. It's been very inspiring. So thank you for participating.
You as well. Thank you.
So once again, that was Lynn McEntee, the publicity chair of the Guelph Little Theatre. That brings us to the end of this episode of Bridging the Social Distance, a show produced at CFRU in Guelph and syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario, that aims to create a platform for us sharing what we are doing to get through this time together in the wake of COVID-19. To take us to the end of the hour, I'm just going to play a short track of music. This is the song Milk Animals Fruit by Ayn Soph off of her new album Abracadabra. Thank you for listening.
Is on the air at 101.5 FM.
You are listening to Bridging the Social Distance. My name is Jenny Mitchell, and I recorded this show here at CFRU, Guelph's campus and community radio station, as a means of creating a platform for us to share ideas and feelings and perspectives in the wake of this global pandemic that is COVID-19. I was afraid that people would get isolated or I would lose the opportunity to chat with my community and find out how everyone is doing, so I made this show. If you're listening and you would like to get involved or be interviewed, interviewed, you can contact me at mobile@cfru.ca. I'd like to provide the disclaimer that these interviews were recorded at different points in time, so situations in some of these locations may have changed. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Lynn McEntee, the publicity chair for the Guelph Little Theatre. This interview was originally recorded on September 2nd, 2020. So to start with, would you like to introduce yourself for listeners?
Sure. Hello, everyone. I'm Lynn McEntee, and I'm from the Guelph Little Theatre. I am the publicity chair.
So you have a few projects underway from me perusing the theater website, which is super exciting. Mm-hmm. Theater during a time of a pandemic must look very different. I guess maybe right out of the gates, do you want to tell me a bit about what the theater has been working on?
Yeah, thank you so much, Jenny. Very cool opportunity to do so. We have gone at it, sort of looking at it in a very positive light, if you will. The time to regroup and sort of bring community in, perhaps, and sort of hit the ground running. There was a pause of, as we tried to navigate our way through the summer, but we, in the back of our minds, knew we had some projects that could possibly be ongoing. And one of them in particular is working with local author Marion Hill. And she's written Cafe Conversations, and she was on the short list of the Stephen Leacock Literary